Our next scripture reading is Mark 16, verses 2 through 8. Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb, and they asked each other, "Who will roll a stone away from the entrance to the tomb?" And when they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had been rolled away. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. "Don't be alarmed," he said. "You are looking for Jesus the Nazarene who was crucified. He has risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter, he is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." Trembling and bewildered, the women went out and fled from the tomb. They said nothing to anyone because they were afraid.
Thank you, Beth. I have a solution to this idea of sitting in someone else's seat. When you go to a major sporting event, you purchase a ticket, and if somebody is in your seat, you show them your ticket. And the ushers, if they don't move, they will come and move that person so you can sit there. So starting next Sunday, no, we're not going to do that. Although that idea is not all that far-fetched. I didn't know until I learned from a Methodist pastor friend of mine that the term Free Methodist, that denomination, came because of that. If you were in the Methodist church, you had to purchase your pew that you sat in on a Sunday morning. And so a new denomination was started where you didn't have to do that. It was called Free Methodist. So we are all free Mennonites this morning. And that's not a bad thing. What a privilege it is to be able to speak on this virtue of love, which is what all of the other ones spring from. It's the actual definition of God. We don't say that God is like love or God can do love. We say that God is love. Come, let us all unite to sing. God is love. It's a difficult virtue to summarize shortly. There are a number of different ways to look at this. You do not have to be a Christian to experience love and to give love. Anyone, any human being can do this. So what's the difference between someone who doesn't believe in the deity, believe in God, versus those of us who do? Is there a different level of love, perhaps? I'd like to think that there is. Now, when I was studying for this message, I thought the resurrection passage is kind of an interesting one. Maybe the Romans passage that Connie read would have been better, or 1 Corinthians 13. But we need this passage to offset the one that was read for wrath. This is God's love being victorious over all. It shows the relentless pursuit throughout the ages of how God has pursued us as his people. The Bible is a story from beginning up until now of God consistently choosing to pursue his people. Love is also, for the believer, not bound by human limitations. That's probably one key difference for anyone who can practice love versus our love as believers in God. There's two places concerning love where there's a tension pendulum that swings back and forth. Sometimes we're on one side more, sometimes we're more on the other. One is in the area of beliefs versus actions. Is it more important to believe right and have the right doctrine? Or is it more important to have actions that are good and loving? There are persons who believe right who don't show much love. And there are persons who don't believe anything but show quite a bit of love. Which one is worse? Perhaps neither is ideal. I'm reminded of Rachel Held Evans, the late Rachel Held Evans, sorry to say, when she spoke at Mennonite Church USA, and she paraphrased, and I've done this before, paraphrased 1 John 4, 7 and 8, "Beloved, let us be right with one another, because being right is from God. And everyone who is right is born of God and knows God, and whoever is not right doesn't know God, for God is right." And then 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and I can't find it, but it's the great that we have faith, hope, and being right, but the greatest of these is being right. Some of us live like that. And she said it's more important to do right than to be right. Juan Carlos Ortiz, who was the speaker at Conservative Mennonite Conference in 1982 here in northern New York, it was held at Beaver River School that year. And Connie and I were working on the staff at Beaver Camp, and we snuck off from doing our job so we could hear this speaker that I had heard before, that I knew to be a fantastically dynamic speaker and person, and he was. And he tells the story of how in his congregation he got up front and said, and he doesn't know why he did this. Some would say God was leading him. He said he was just fed up with everything. Brothers and sisters, love one another. And he went and sat down. And there was kind of a long silence. People thought maybe the choir is supposed to sing again, and so they were waiting. He got up and did that a second time. Brothers and sisters, love one another. Three times he did this. He doesn't know how it started in the rest of the congregation, but he remembers how it started around him. He heard a person behind him saying, "I think I know what our speaker's trying to say this morning. To show love to one another, and I don't even know who you are." He's saying that to the person next to him. "Is there some way I can help you? Can I pray for you? Is there some way that I can show love to you?" And that sort of worked its way throughout the whole congregation, and the service took a couple hours that day because people were actually physically and emotionally and spiritually showing love to one another. Sounds like a good thing to be able to preach to a congregation like that, but Juan Carlos Ortiz said it became a challenge because now people were actually going to do what he said they were supposed to do, and he couldn't just count on the fact that people were going to forget what he said the minute they left, and he had to be more careful with his sermon. So if you want to make us work a little bit harder, there's one way to do that. The whole thing of beliefs versus actions, where are you at in that pendulum? The other one is judgment versus grace, and maybe I'm exaggerating the point, but God's judgment versus God's grace, I believe that pendulum swing is a lot of what's driving some of the controversy in our churches today. It was pointed out again last night how many times the Mennonite denomination had splits and groups move in different directions. And it's been happening for decades. It's happening now. It's happening to us personally in this congregation. I don't see an end to that. Is it the question of God's judgment versus God's grace? Too much of one, too much of the other, and if it's not in line with what we think, sometimes a group has to shift and move away. There's a old Andy Griffith television show where there's a young boy and he's behaving very badly on his bicycle in the show. His name was Arnold, by the way. I just thought of that. Arnold would ride his bike on the sidewalk, and he'd terrorize people, and he almost ran into Barney Fife one day. And so Sheriff Taylor and Barney Fife impounds his bike, takes it to the courthouse, and Arnold says, "Oh, I'm not worried about that. You just wait till my dad comes. He's going to get that bike back for me." Well, sure enough, his dad comes in. "Sheriff, is this really necessary? He's just a high-spirited boy." And they start having this little discussion, and Arnold starts really getting belligerent. "See, I told you he was going to come in here," and he was very disrespectful. And a new look comes over the father's face. And the father says to Sheriff Taylor, "Sheriff, I would like you to give that bike back to me, but I'm not going to give it to my son. I'm going to sell it. He needs to learn better behavior." Well, Arnold throws a temper tantrum right there in the courtroom, and he's just a hollering and crying, and Sheriff Taylor says to Arnold's father, "Sir, there's a good woodshed right in the back here." And father stops and says, "A good old-fashioned woodshed?" Andy Taylor says, "Yes." And the last scene of the episode is dad saying, "Come on, Arnold." And they walk out the back, and you know what's going to happen. Some of us grew up in that kind of atmosphere, and whether we got corporally punished or not, we had that idea that if we broke the rules, there was going to be punishment there. Unfortunately, many of us look over our shoulder because we were raised that way, which, how else can you be raised, really? As human beings, because we were raised that way, to have a God who loves us in spite of everything, that can be a hard idea to assimilate in our minds. And we start seeing God as someone who's looking over our shoulder and just waiting to take us to the woodshed and straighten us out. I stumbled on a Phil Donahue talk show that had three atheists on one side and three people of faith on the other, and they were having this debate back and forth. And the number one complaint of those on the atheist side is, what good does it do a human being to go through life imagining some God looking over your shoulder who's going to punish you all the time? And they had a point. And maybe there is a short circuit in how we think about God. If you're on the judgment side of the equation and thinking of God more in that way, perhaps you would say, what about the Ten Commandments? It's very clear. Thou shalt do this, thou shalt not do this. Well, I learned something at our minister's retreat at Beaver Camp this past August that I had never seen. It's very significant. And you'd think I would have seen this, but I hadn't. Marion Bontrager shared with us there's actually 11 commandments. Doesn't say there's 10 anywhere in Scripture. We say there's 10. There's 11. And it starts off in Exodus chapter 20, verse 2, remember, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. So the Ten Commandments start with grace, start with the realization God has brought us to this place. And then it moves into the Ten Commandments. You shall have no other God before me. That changes my perspective. How much trouble has your ability to love gotten you into, your great ability to love? I suppose it would be easy to say that for those of us who are on the good side of the equation, well, God's judgment can actually be a way of showing his love, like we as parents discipline our children. The Warner Brothers cartoon series had a cartoon once where someone had invented a spanking machine, and every time a child told a lie, there was a needle and it said truth on one side and lie on the other. And when the child told a lie, there was a dinging sound and the needle went to lie. And it picked up the child and put him in a chair and a little hand would come out and whack, 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 whack. Well, one parent decided I could discipline my own child. And so when the child was caught doing something wrong, the parent says to the child, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it's going to hurt you. And the machine goes ding, 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 and it says lie, and it picks up the parent, whack, 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 whack. Some of the greatest theology we have today comes from Warner Brothers cartoons. That was one of my favorite. I think of that when I think maybe I have said that to my kids. And those of you who are parents, probably you know in your head what you mean, how painful it is to do that discipline. But what kid believes that? So it's very easy to see God as someone watching over your shoulder. How much grace do we grant God, and how much do we show it? Jesus' love was so extreme that it led him on the path to crucifixion. However, the resurrection equips us to show an endless depth of love that goes beyond human limitation. It enabled Michael Sattler, an Anabaptist forefather of ours who was burned at the stake when they mutilated his tongue. They could still hear him praying for his captors and for the guards that were leading him to his death. It enabled the Amish family in Pennsylvania, the Nickel Mines area, to show forgiveness and love to the person who had come in and caused such difficulty through the shooting at that school in that family. It enabled the Apostle Paul to say, always show love to our enemies and those who capture us, because nothing, as was written in that passage that Connie read from the book of Romans, nothing can ever separate us from the love of God. So in that way, love's a little bit dangerous virtue. How often has it gotten you in trouble? And if it does, then maybe you know you're practicing it the way Christ has practiced it for us.